Hello and welcome to ngbuild-pod, where we share with you our knowledge of Angular, all the mistakes we've made, and some of the things we've gotten right. I'm Chris Kamak, and with me as always is the dynamic John Graham. We are both full-stack Angular developers that love to share and be part of the developer community. And we both work here at Miles Technologies in Lumberton, New Jersey, on the Engine team, where we've spent the last several years building out our Angular template for the Miles software division. So, John, what have you been up to in the past couple weeks?
Yeah, so we were actually just talking before we hit the record button here. And
the pre-show?
The pre-show, yeah. I've always wanted to say that. I think I'm from New Jersey, you're from Philadelphia, which is, you know, basically South Jersey and Philadelphia are the same thing. But, you know, New Jersey's been hit really hard with the coronavirus, so... just been trying to stay home, stay mentally healthy, as good as we can. It's been nice having some time to spend with my family that I wouldn't normally have, I think. It's been tough spending some time with my family that I wouldn't normally have. So there's been a lot of that. From a technical standpoint, though, I think the cool thing I've been starting up is actually working on the podcast website.
I like that.
So I've been messing around with that a little bit. I am, by my own admission, terrible at CSS and styling and things. So I've been pulling from lots of inspiration from other people and trying to figure out how they actually accomplished it. But I think it's coming along nicely, and I'm learning about RSS feeds and stuff like that. So hopefully we'll have a website up, in the not too long term, although I'm not spending a whole lot of time on it. But it's been interesting to kind of learn that. And eventually I'm going to try to statically compile it with Scully, which is, you know, the thing for Angular, because I'm building it in Angular, obviously. Wouldn't use anything else. I'm looking forward to that.
Sounds awesome.
The two things majorly.
Cool.
How about you, man? What have you been doing?
Aaron and I have been playing Civ 6 together.
Oof.
Yeah. Oof. We bit the bullet and bought that thing, and now we're sitting there using our quarantine time to play it hot seat together. We're playing on the same team right now, so we're not really competing with each other, but I know the day is coming. The day is coming where she is going to religiously convert all of my cities. I know it's going to happen.
I was going to say, as long as the politics don't bleed out into the household, you'll be okay, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I'll do that for you, as long as you promise to cede Brisbane to me. You know, as long as you give me that city, I'll do this for you. Yeah.
Nice.
So anyhow, that's how we've been keeping ourselves busy.
Yeah, that's cool. I've always like really enjoyed the concept of that game, but I've never actually, you know, sat down and got through, playing it for any substantial amount of time.
Yeah, it helps when you have a partner. It really does.
Cool. So what are we going to be talking about today?
All right. So, sometimes when you're making an Angular site, you have one, two, maybe many more components that you want to conditionally show, only one of them once is going to be shown, maybe based on some set of circumstances. You know, this is easy to achieve if you wanted to use ngifs or, but that leads to like a messy template setup, so now you've got this HTML and it's like, well, if this situation, then show this component, but if not this situation, show this other one. And then it feels like it's really garbled at that point. So it can get harder and harder the more things you have to add too. Like maybe we're not just talking about two conditions. Maybe we're talking about seven. We're going to tackle this problem a little bit today. We're going to talk about something that we're calling component orchestration, which is the idea of utilizing your template to sort of figure out what components it should be doing. Making this whole process much easier to work with. John, we want to get into our quick tips first, though, right?
Yeah. So are you announcing today that you're releasing the Angular Netties, the Kubernetes version of Angular for everybody? Is that what you're going to do?
No. Oh, okay. No, it's not cubed. It's not Kubernetes. No, this is a much lower level stuff here, but very important. It definitely comes up in a lot of situations, and we'll be laying out like a little example.
I was just going to say before I do my quick tip, I think this is an interesting topic because it's not really something that easily fits in a different form. You know what I mean? Like you can't do like a whole course on it or an entire training setup. So it's just something that kind of just like people don't. I don't really see people figuring this out too easily. And I like this kind of topic because it's just different. You know, it's something to talk about different. It's not like a technical challenge necessarily as much as like a, you know, philosophical challenge of writing code. So
yeah, and it's definitely something that we've figured out based on necessity. You know, like once you make the mistakes enough, you're like, ah, this, there's got to be a better way to handle this. And that's something we're going to talk about, you know, because you may not know it, but you probably need to look at your code in that kind of way.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So we won't leak any more information until we get to the meat of it. But so my quick tip today is really around something that I needed recently. So we've been converting a lot of our backend stuff to .NET Core from .NET Framework. And one of the things we've been doing is building like a tool that helps people convert, common changes. So like in a lot of cases with the web API, you know, they just, things have moved to different APIs or different namespaces or whatever the case is. And upgrading them is, you know, as simple as just replacing some text. So we've been building a tool for that. And I've been working with some of the new things that I need to do. And one of the things that has helped me out is regex. And I know you brought up regex in a previous quick tip, I think a couple episodes ago.
Oh yeah, we're all friends now, regex.
You guys are big friends now. You haven't forgotten it, have you?
Completely.
Past 2 weeks. But the tool that I like a lot is a website called regex101.com. And the thing I really like about it is it's just kind of like it like on the fly parses the regex that you're writing and puts it into quote unquote human readable syntax, right? So it says, I'm going to look for one occurrence of this letter type, right? Which you should know if you know regex, but if you're like me, which is you're kind of stumbling through it, you can get that immediate output on what it is that your regex is actually doing, and again, the human readable term. So it was really helpful for doing those simple things that I needed to do for this project.
Yeah, I've used that myself, and I agree with you. I think it's a fantastic way to go, and I don't remember any of that stuff, as we've talked about before.
How dare you? turn in your developer card at the door when you leave this virtual podcast.
I don't think I ever had one.
It's in the mail.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you got?
I wanted to just talk quickly about the woes that I had a few years ago when I started working a little bit more with Angular and the front end frameworks that are available, having to do with the consoles. That couldn't remember the word. Yeah. The consoles that are available. So like if you're using Visual Studio Code, you can get a console window, obviously, and you can say that you want to use Bash or whatever it is you want to do. Or you could download WinBash or something like that. And you could try and use Command Prompt or PowerShell. There's all kinds of options, but none of them really work very well for general use when it comes to using Unix or Linux-based stuff. So what I found is I had to go looking and find something that would do all this stuff better, something that would run our Yeoman templates and have those actually ask questions and have coloring and make it so it makes sense and I can read it and understand it. Have something that would run ng-serve statements and make sense, something that would give me feedback about Git and allow me to look at that and understand it well, something that worked for pretty much all scenarios. And the only thing I found that worked for me back then was Commander. Which is actually spelled CMDER. And if you go to CMDER.net, which we'll have in the show links there for you, that is a emulator that is basically a pet project from people that had the exact same problem that I did. In fact, I'm going to go right there right now and take a look. I'm pretty sure the first line on their site is that Commander is a software package created out of pure frustration over the absence of nice console emulators on Windows. So I mean, that is what it is for. And it's really a combination of a couple of things, but it's a great, great little piece of software that you can just download, run the EXE on your setup. And it is very portable, lightweight, and it does a great job. So I highly recommend it.
Awesome. Yeah, I never got into it because I've always kind of done the Bash stuff. But I see it on your screen a lot, and it does seem like a really awesome tool. I think that, like, hopefully Windows is addressing this with Windows Terminal, mm-hmm. which is their new thing, but it's obviously still, you know, not quite ready for prime time. So I definitely think it's worth checking out if you're in a similar situation you were in. It seems like a really cool tool.
Yeah, it was before they had that I ended up finding this.
Yeah.
And then I went to check that out because everyone was talking about it one day on Twitter. And I was like, oh, Windows Terminal. And then it said, go to the Windows Store. And I was like, nope, I'm out.
Poor Windows Store.
Forget the Windows Store. Not doing it.
So mean. You can download Ubuntu in the Windows Store now.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Get a whole Linux. All right. We'll work on that at a later time. We'll work on that with you.
All right, cool. So in order to kick this topic off, this component orchestration stuff, we really have to lay out an example, like a working example that we can continually reference throughout the different solutions we'll be talking about today on the episode. So John, would you please do the honors here of laying out this example that we're going to use?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, obviously we've used this quite a bit internally on some of our applications, but you know, when we're discussing it here, we need to think about something that people can relate with that maybe don't have context into, you know, all of the problems that you're trying to solve. So when we were kind of talking through this, you and I discussed the example of like a forum, right? So I think most people that listen to tech podcasts know what a forum is, and it's just really a way to discuss, you know, issues or questions or things like that together as a, you know, in threads and things. And what you can think about with a forum when you're thinking about it from like a design structure is that it usually has very similar UI components, right? So when I go to, you know, create a brand new post versus when I go to reply to a post, those are going to look very similar, but not exactly the same, right? Because replying to something and posting something, you may have some different options. And just to, I think, maybe make the point a little bit more clear, think about like if you wanted to do a poll, right? So a poll isn't going to have a big text box to type out a bunch of things, right? Because you're creating a poll, right? You may want to type a little bit. So, you know, these are all things that are going to look very similar, but have like little minor differences between a bunch of different things. And, you know, that's kind of the example scenario we want people to keep in mind as we're going through discussing this component orchestration concept and how it can help solve the kinds of problems that exist with the, you know, with the forum example. You know, what else do you think is important to kind of lay out for anybody? Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think let's talk about like how what's the lowest denominator way that you might decide to handle this. So like if I'm sitting there and I'm looking at a channel in a forum and there's a number of posts in that channel, there's probably going to be replies to those posts as well. So if I'm looking at a post with its replies, they're really the same type of item. They're a forum item, but the post and the reply slightly different, and probably maybe, you know, depending on the look, maybe the reply is slightly indented. Maybe the reply has some sort of a UI element, like an arrow that looks like it's a return arrow or something that indicates, oh, this is a reply, you know, or maybe it's colored differently. Any of those types of situations could be handled pretty simply, right? Like we could say that it's a forum post. And we could check inside the forum post itself and say, hey, is this element a reply? Because if it is, show the arrow for the reply or make it purple instead of blue or what? Or not, those are horrible colors to choose. But whatever. My point being, you could do this through just simple ngifs on the elements you want to change. You know, indent, yes or no, true or false. Is this yes or reply, yes, no? So I guess what I'm saying is you could do this very simply if you just had one template and you just ng-ifed certain elements in order to make that happen.
Yeah, so you're saying like if I'm building this, right, and we don't, and of course we all get all of the requirements up front and we get all of the understanding up front, so we never have to add anything.
Where right? do you work again?
sorry, I zoned out for a minute there and was dreaming. But so, you know, I think that, you know, in this example, it's important that, like, you know, you could just build this all in one giant control, right? Because you don't have all this information up front. You're just kind of adding things as you go. So, you know, maybe you take a small section out and you create a component for that, but that needs to be ng-ifed, you know, in and out of existence. You know, so hopefully you're doing a little bit of cleanup up front to make things componentized a little bit. But you're being pounded with new scenarios constantly. So your template gets, you know, a little clunky. Like, for instance, like I'll throw another one in there, like moderation tools, right? So if you're moderating a forum, you may want to do different actions on a post versus a reply, right? Maybe you can hide a reply, but you have to delete a post, you know, those kinds of things. So that's all stuff that's being, you know, kind of thrown in after the fact, or you didn't think about it ahead of time. And so you're just, you create a bunch of these NGFs and now you've got quite a mess on your hands. You know, by the time this whole forum is done, assuming you built it all kind of in one template, like you're saying, right?
Yeah, sure. And I mean, let's do what normally happens in these projects. You got a post and a reply, and that's all you've got. And then feedback comes in, and a month later they're saying, well, we want to have polls, so you need to add polls now. And you're like, okay, I'll just NGF a poll in place. And then, you know, 2 months later, they're like, well, we want to have forum announcements as well appearing in these slots. And you're like, okay, now there's a fourth thing, you know, and it can go on and on. Now you've got ads you're going to add in there. You know, whatever. The idea here is that this could keep growing, and as it does over time, eventually, this is just not going to work anymore. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's getting huge.
Yeah, and you end up with like all this like nested HTML, which is never fun to look at or you know, go through. The other thing to think about too, that I don't think people really weigh into the decision on when to refactor something, right? And we're gonna, I think, go into like what's the first step to refactor that scenario, is like think about testing, right? So like now you've added like three, you know, two additional scenarios on top of the ones that I've already added. Let's not even go the route of unit testing. Let's just go to the route of, you want me to change something just for announcements. I better make sure all the rest of this page still works. You know what I mean? So like, it just becomes quite a bear to be confident that, you know, you're not breaking things.
Yeah. Separation of concerns.
Yeah. Aside from an eyesore, you know what I mean? Like when you're actually looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. It gives me a headache. That's the problem.
It hurts to read.
Yes.
Can we make it not hurt to read?
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the first step in a refactor of this. I think the first thing I can think of to do is, if I have a template where I say, you know, this div that represents a post, we'll ngf that if it's a post. And the next div, I'll ngf that into play if it's a reply. Well, that's better than having individual elements within the post that are showing or not showing. So that's good. But I think another step even better than that, and one that I hope most people would make as a leap, is they would say, okay, well, I'm going to make a component that is the post. So now I've got an element that I'm referencing. Let's say that's app-post, you know? And so instead of having the entire template sit there in the ngif div, I just have the post. But in this scenario, let's say that we've got four things. We've got a post, a reply, a poll, and an announcement. Let's say those four things exist. If so, then I still have an NGF on my app-post. I still have an NGF on my app-reply, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that's really key that I think is really nice when you're thinking about this refactor a little bit, just to throw it in there as an aside, is like when we're doing code reviews, I think you and I share the same like mentality of, we do the initial code, like code smelling test, right? Go through and look at things. And when you're looking at these, you know, most likely you've got a div that's ngifed, right? That's got a bunch of things inside of it, right? Like a huge grouping of things. And like, to me, that's like an instant code smell of like, probably could be a component. You know what I mean? Like, I've got all of these things just sitting inside of an NGF, like multiple elements, right? Like, there's not one element to a post. You know what I mean? So I think it's pretty easy when you step back and look at it that way to see, like, I've already created some logical grouping out of necessity. Why not just now take that and, you know, refactor those into components? So we get to your scenario, which is it's not ideal. You still have all these NGFs, but at least you're NGFing a single thing versus a giant block of code.
Oh, yes, it's way better. It's way better. And I also look at that as the collapse test. If I have to collapse the code on my left-hand side of the Visual Studio Code, if I have to collapse it because I want to be able to see the top thing above it and the thing below it, I'm like, yeah, that probably should have been a component. You know? But yeah, it's a good point, definitely. So let's say that you did that. And let's say that you now have these NGFs on those components. Well, that's nice. But that's still not really where we want to be. And the reason that is because we still have a different NGF for every scenario. We only ever plan to have one of them show, but we have an NGF for each scenario. And we've been talking so far about four possibilities. It could be a lot more than four. Like, it could be 10, 12. How many does it need to be?
Yeah. And it's like, what are you NGFing on right now? Right. You're NGFing on some like variable, right, of a type, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. So what type of, you know, post is this, right? So we have this higher level post object at this point. You know, so this can be a tough thing to figure out because there's no, you know, it's not a Boolean. You know, that's an easy thing. Like, is this true or is this false? I mean, at the end of the day, it's a Boolean, right? But you get what I'm saying. Like, you're not just, you know, checking against a, you know, two static values. You're going to have a, like you're saying, a potentially long list of things that you need to check against. So this is tough. This is not an ideal scenario. I think this is when, you know, you and I would introduce something like an enumerator to help with just that NGF process, right? So that at least we're NGFing on something that's more statically typed versus like just a magic string is what I think people like to call it when you're just switching on these types of magic strings.
Yeah, I agree. I would definitely make an enumerator for, you know, form item type dot post, form item type dot reply. And just to take that a step further, I would probably assign the enumerator for that in the service where I got these items in the first place. You know, I would probably say, when you get these items from the back end, from the database, once they come in, let's map them and set the enumerator on them before we even return them from the service, which allows us in that case to just say, all right, we already know the enumerator is present. It's already been determined what type this is. So I think that that's a definite upgrade on that. I do want to say, though, there's also a performance concern here, right? Like, NGIF is something that is dynamically shown or hidden, meaning it's going to be evaluated. It's evaluated every step of the way. Every time a change to section cycle runs, it's going to say, should this NGIF be true or should it be false? When for you, you know this is never going to be anything other than the result it already was. We've determined it's a reply. Therefore, it's always a reply. So having all these other NGFs that have to check their state constantly, that's not really good, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm glad you think about that because I was thinking about something different, completely different way that this is beneficial. So it's nice to have, like, two perspectives on it. You know, I was even thinking of, like, you know, solving the two hardest problems in software development. Naming things, naming things, I forget what the second one is.
I don't know. I think the two hardest things are dates and dates.
Well, we'll go with your, it's like naming things, dates, and off by 1 hours. Those are the two hardest.
Oh, yeah, 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 sure.
I forget what the second one is. Somebody's shouting at their audio device right now with the obvious answer. But
yeah, probably.
You know, I think about, like, you know, the nice thing about having enumerators and doing it the way you're doing it is you're probably going to end up, like, conflicting things eventually down the road. So say you have a type of a poll. And then, you know, you come up, there's a lot of different kinds of polls you can do, right? There's like straw polls you can do, and, you know, there's a bunch of different other variations of it. So if your first poll is just of an enumerator type poll, when you get a second pole, what are you going to call that? You know, you can't call that pole two. You know
I would mean? Call like, it pole two every day of the week. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, but when you have pole two, you can't have pole one. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just have something called pole anymore because now you have like this subtype of poles. So, you know, centralizing it, right? That's what we're talking about here, into one place so that you can make changes to it and you know, be confident that it's not going to break. Or, you know, the reason why pole two exists in the real world is because people don't think to centralize things, right? And then they're scared. Well, I can't change pole. If I change pole, I'm going to break it in a bunch of places.
Yeah, sure. Agreed. So what we've done so far is we've talked about ways to make knowing what component it is easier and cleaner. We've talked about how to make your template not as messy. But we definitely have not fixed the problem of there's a bunch of NGIFs that are evaluating all the time. And I just want to make a shout out before we move on. You could use an NG switch here. I know that that's not a very common or popular one to use. But if you think of an NG switch as essentially being an NGIF that only can be one write at a time, it's really the same concept. But this doesn't fix our problem because the NG switch would just evaluate over and over again. So it's still not good. But yeah, I mean, you could use an NG switch here, but what's another way that we could handle this, John? What's a better way?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, to address the performance issue you're talking about, right? Because we know we only ever have one type of component, right? We know that. And there's really the only variations live inside of the different types of components, right? So, you know, there is slight variations, but we've encapsulated them. And, you know, you can, I think, listen to some of our other podcasts where we talk about abstract components and stuff to share things among those components. We'll leave that for a different topic. But, you know, now that we have these all split and we only need one instance, Angular actually provides like a really awesome, you know, service to help with this. And that's the component factory, right? Is it like the resolver factory? Is that what it's actually called? What is it actually
it's, called? Component it's resolver the component factory resolver. Ah. It's all those things lumped into one statement, as Angular does.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I have to always have to Google this stuff. But essentially what this tool lets you do is instead of having these NGFs, right, and having to define a bunch of things, what you do instead is you define a reference in your template. Right. And I'll talk about more about what that is in a minute. But you would define a place in your template where you're going to make a decision on what you're going to show. And the decision is going to be a component, right? Like at the end of the day, you're going to decide to show a type of component. And you define a place. And then what you do is you use the component resolver factory to say, resolver factory or factory resolver? I don't want to say it wrong for the rest of the
component
podcast.
Component factory resolver.
Factory resolver. Okay. I don't want to say it like people are going to, like, you get one pass, but that's it. Okay. So the component factory resolver, you know, what it does is inside of like a function, you're going to have your NG switch, right? And you're going to say, what type am I? And then based on the type, you're going to use the component factory resolver to dynamically load a component into the template at runtime. So rather than it evaluating inside of the template every time, like you said, it does some digest cycle, you're deciding once when this function runs that you want to inject this component dynamically into the location that you that you've defined in your template. You know, so this is obviously like way more performant because you're making a decision once. You're not making it every single time something random happens, like I click, and it's, you know, going to make performance a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree, and I think that this is where we come, again, this is just our terminology, but this is where we come up with the idea of component orchestration. You know, something needs to determine which component should go here, you know, and so this orchestration, this putting in the component that I need right now for this thing is really the magic piece that we've used in so many cool ways. And I really enjoy this kind of setup. So let's ask the questions here. Let's talk about how we would do this. If you're doing a component factory resolver, where does that go? Like, how do you use it?
Yeah, so I think there's two pieces to it, right? Let's start with Let's start with the thing that I think about first. I don't know that it's the great place to start when you're writing the code. But the thing that I think about first is, well, okay, I want to show these templates or these components dynamically, but how do I know where they go? Right? Like, where are they going to go? You know what I mean? Like, they can't just appear out of thin air. So the first thing you need to do is you need to have what Angular calls a template ref, like a reference to the template of the location and, elements that you're going to be attaching this logic to. Now that can be anything, right? It could be a div, it could be a span, it could be whatever you want it to be. What we've done is we've actually created a directive in a lot of cases, and we'll include this link in the show notes, but Angular has their own version of our forum example that they have on their website where they're using ads. And they do the same thing. They create like a directive. I don't know who did it first. Let's just say I didn't know about the Angular thing until I went to research it. And we had already had that, but maybe they did it first. But so you create this directive. And all this directive is doing is it's giving you a way to attach to a template ref when you're going to load this component resolver factory, right? So you're saying this is going to be what I'm going to look for when I'm resolving these components. And then the next piece is to actually, take that template ref, that view container ref, I think is what they call it, in the resolver factory, and pass that in when you're deciding what dynamic component to be, right? So you pass that in, and then the factory resolver attaches the component to that ref, right? And when it attaches it to that ref, that's what causes it to be loaded into the system. That's what loads the template. It runs all the stuff for that component. It kind of like, it's the same way as if like the router, for instance, was going to render it on the screen. It runs through all of its normal lifecycle digestion.
I think that's a great example that you just brought up. The fact that it's like if you were using the router in order to bring about a component, it's actually exactly like the router situation. So if the router is going to spawn a component and drop it wherever the router outlet is, well, that's exactly what we're talking about. That's like almost exactly the situation. We're saying here is a in our case, we made a directive. Here's the directive. I'm putting it on this div. So this directive is now saying, I would like to put a component, spawn it, and put it inside of the div where I put the directive. So the directive is on the div, and the component goes inside of that div. Because the directive is accessing that view container ref and saying, all right, component factory resolver, spin up a component. Here's the component I want you to spin up. Put it right here inside the div. And that's really, in essence, what it is. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I guess we should mention that like the view container ref is a property on the element, right? Like that's something that Angular provides for you. So really, we're just usually using view child to access the directive, right? So we have a directive called like add post, right? We'll just say that that's the name of our directive here, or forum post, something like that. So what we do is we'd have a view child. So we'd have that forum post directive on some div, and that's all that's in the template, right? There's no ngifs, none of this stuff. Like it's just a div with a, you know, forum post directive on it. Then we use the view child to grab the forum post directive. And off of that view child, we can access the view container ref, right? And then so once we have the view container ref, that's where we can call, there's a method called create component. And what you need to give component, create component, is you need to give create component an instance of the factory resolver, right? So you establish the factory resolver, you tell it which component it's going to do, which you'd have some, you know, switch statement or if statement in your code to create that factory resolver object. Then you're using view child to access the view container ref, and you pass that factory resolver into the view container ref. And then once you do that, that's when it runs this cycle you were just talking about, which is like it's essentially the same as the router.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example of exactly the kind of situation we're talking about. So you could certainly do it with just adding this directive right into the template. You could also create a component, right? And the component could be something that says forum item, and it has an at input of the forum item instance. So the particular instance in this repeater of the forum item. Anyways, so once you get into the component, inside there could be this div with the directive, right? And now that we have the div and the directive right there, we can access its view container ref, and we have the component resolver. And since we were passed the item in an at input, we know exactly based on the enumerator which component we're supposed to be making in this factory resolver. So that's kind of like all the pieces tied together.
Yeah, and that's nice because, you know, I think that does a few things. I think A, that makes it so that you don't have that switch logic repeated in a bunch of places, right, to determine which component you want to load dynamically. I think the other thing it does too, just naturally me listening to it, is it's a more clear, it's more clear what you're intending to have happen with this, right? Because I think like typically an Angular developer isn't going to look at a directive and assume that it's going to dynamically load a component into the view. You know, it's just not something you're going to see. I mean, it would look weird, you know, looking at just a directive hanging out with no template, right? Although, you know, in some cases you do that, so it's not like totally strange. I think it's much more easy to see like that component declaration you're talking about sitting there, because then it's just a more natural like, oh, okay, this is going to load a bunch of stuff. I just naturally kind of know that.
Yeah,
and I think that's really cool. I think the one thing we should maybe talk about real quick is what's the difference between a component that is like, what is the actual difference between these two components, like a component that you just throw in an NGF and a component that you load through the component factory resolver. And I think there's just one major difference, which is that it's known as like an entry component in the old school Angular world, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, prior to Angular 9, these had to be designated as entry components. And that's because the way that the previous to Ivy, the way that the compiler worked is it said, okay, I can see all of the components that are in your templates directly and referenced, and I know exactly where they are. They're either in a route or they're in your template somewhere. And if they didn't appear in any of those places, it just wouldn't include those components. It's like, I don't need those. So if you had something that was dynamically going to be spawned, you had to tell it explicitly that that was the case, and you had to list it as an entry component in some module somewhere. Otherwise, when you tried to do this dynamic instantiation using the factory resolver, it would error and say, did you forget to add this to entry components? Like, I kind of knew what the problem was, but it didn't fix it for you.
It was one of the most helpful error messages I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and but that's the problem, right? Like, as developers, when we see a really helpful error message, we're like, why didn't you just take care of it then?
Yeah.
All right, so well, here's the good news. In Angular 9 with Ivy, they did take care of it for you. You don't have to designate anything as an entry component. Everything is an entry component, technically, and could be used dynamically. So if you're prior to 9, you're going to need to do that. That's just a helpful reminder.
Yeah, and if you're listening and you're not caught up to, you know, the terminology in 9 and Ivy and things like that, Ivy is essentially just a whole brand new rendering engine that the Angular team built to address a lot of performance issues and things like that, so including like the entry components. So, you know, that's just when I think you can actually use Ivy in 8 technically as like a preview feature. So just the main difference is that once you're using Ivy, you know, you don't need to. If you're not using Ivy, you need to declare entry components, right? So,
sure.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so hopefully we've kind of laid out a pretty good roadmap to go from messy templates to orchestrated components.
Yeah,
I think though, like if it would be nice to circle back on some of the things we were just saying and talk about, you know, like when's the right time to do this. Because one of the things I like to make fun of one of our other colleagues, Tramiel, is big on this like containers and Kubernetes and stuff like that. And I am not. So every time somebody suggests like use container orchestration or use this orchestration, event-driven orchestration, like all of these things, I always go, you know, can't we just solve this without that? And it won't be too complicated. like, you know what I mean? Like there's a tax, I guess, involved with this concept.
Yeah.
That I think like maybe we should circle back on and talk about that a little bit more, as to like, you know, how do you recognize when it's time to maybe do this shift? Do you do it up front? I guess would be the first question. Do you just start with container or component orchestration right off the bat, or do you add it in later? What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on the project, right? Like, let's say that I'm in a situation where I'm creating a forum and I have a post and a reply and that's all I got. And I don't necessarily anticipate that I'm going to have anything else. Well, I probably at that point am not going to do it via a factory resolver. There's just two things and I don't necessarily expect there to be anything else. But if down the road, you know, like a month later, somebody comes along and says, we'd like to add polls as another type of forum item. Yeah, I mean, my magic number generally in programming is 3. If I have to do something 3 times, then I probably should find a better way to handle it than to just continually add items. Because once I get to 3, my for some reason, my brain switches and says, what if there's 12?
Yeah.
Would this work well if it were 12? You know, and I guess the reason I feel that way, I'm just going to give you a little bit of insight into my thinking on this. The reason I feel that way is I've been in projects before where someone tells me that they would like to add some new item to an existing set of pieces. And I go to the code to do that work, and there are 11 things. And they want me to add another. And I'm like, okay, I certainly can add a 12th, but I would rather not. And I would rather this be something that could be figured out in the way we've described so far. The problem is, when you get up to that high of a number, the how daunting it is, how hard it is to overcome the inertia of actually refactoring all the other 11 is so big. It's so hard to overcome by that time. It is, you have buried yourself. You have dug almost completely to China. You have to just keep going the rest of the way. You can't come backwards now. So, you know, I guess what I think is when I get to 3, it's not hard for me to consider refactoring 2 things prior.
Yeah. And
does that make sense?
Think, yeah, definitely. And I mean, I use your rule of 3 in a different way, actually, that I think like applies the same thinking. And it's one of the reasons why I like TypeScript so much, is that my rule of 3 is on parameters. You may have heard me say this before in some of our meetings, but like to me, when I see a method and I get up to 3 parameters, if somebody asks me and I'm going to need a 4th parameter, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. Right. You know, and it just, you know, when you start to add lots of parameters, because we made this mistake early on when we were building our template, is we gave people tons of constructor parameters for objects and things like that to do changing of configurations, is that, you know, say you want to make something optional, you know, say you want to make a component like completely optional, you just maybe you don't even need to use it. You know, it order starts to matter as well, right? It's not just you know, that you're adding a parameter, it's that you can't add it here. You have to add it at the end because that's where all your optionals go. So that's when I like to introduce, you know, a refactor like this so that, you know, you're giving yourself the flexibility to take advantage of some other things in the future.
Yeah. If I had a nickel for every time that I saw 1 parameter being passed, a 2nd parameter being passed, and then the 3rd one was null, comma, null, comma, null, and then finally another parameter. Yeah. The only reason for ever writing a method that way is because you want to set an optional parameter 3 deep from the place where optional parameters started. And you can't get there without passing null into the other spots. That's the worst.
Yeah,
it's so bad.
I mean, and to be fair to the other side, like you're not going to create an object with 1 property, right? Like that's a waste of time. You know,
oh, yeah.
So like you can't build, you don't want to build a component orchestrator that only orchestrates 1 component. That's a waste of time. You know what I mean? So I agree with you. It's definitely the dance of like, you know, you don't want to let things trickle in slowly here and there. And you just get 1 and 2 and then 3 and then, okay, I'll let you do 4. Okay. It's an emergency. We got to do 5. Okay, now we're at 5. I don't really want to add 1 right now. So I don't want to refactor this right now. So I'm going to do 6. And then like, that's how you get into this boat. That you really can't, you know, you can't get out of, is that, you know, you just make these small steps that end up being daunting to overcome. I guess we should plug our previous episode where we talked about unit testing, right? Because I think that that helps a lot with this sort of scenario.
I agree. It definitely helps out. I think that, you know, if you can have decent unit testing, you can feel very comfortable with doing a refactor, which, you know, that's the end game. You want to be at a point where you can refactor and not feel like you're possibly breaking the world. And that can be through unit testing or through integration testing or, you know, end-to-end testing. There's lots of ways to be certain that your program still does what it's supposed to do. You know, I think that that's a great call out, John.
Cool. Awesome. Well, anything else you want to dive into before we get to our final thoughts here?
No, I think that was a good comprehensive overview.
Sweet. So I think like this is component orchestration. It's what we're calling it. It's really just code organization at the end of the day. We just like to put catchy names around things to make people remember them. But it's about making your code organized, right? And what I think we're planning on talking about a lot more of these topics in the future, which is like how to just have good organization, good design, good layout of your code itself. You alluded to it by, you know, there's so many layers of like you said, hey, well, rather than a directive, we just make a component that handles this, right? So things become so layered that I think it's important to just think about this kind of problem as a layered problem, right? It's not like Redux where you're like, I'm either using it or I'm not. You know what I mean? It's a thing where you can just introduce this component orchestrator as needed, and you can take it to the level you want to take it to, right? You can just make a very simple one that just uses the factory resolver in the component, and you're just loading them in there, and that's all you're doing, and it's in one place, and that's fine. You could write a service that does this for you, where you know you can take instances of components and spin them up. So there's a lot of different levels to this, and you have to just apply the appropriate one for the scenario you're in. If you're stepping through and, you know, like you said, you're getting to the 12th parameter, you know, it's time to start thinking about this stuff. But really, again, I just go back to the code smell, because I think it's always hard for people to like identify this, right? They say to themselves like, oh, that sounds great. How do I know where that is in my code? And you just give it the sniff test. You know, do you have NGFs? Do you have like more than three in a component, right? Let's just use that number three everywhere. Do you have like more than three NGFs? Okay, let me look at this. Well, these really aren't things that I could break up. Okay, you leave them. Or you look at them and you're like, well, look, this has like a huge amount of elements inside of it. Why don't I make it a component, right? So you're setting yourself up to be able to move into this in the future, right? There's so many things you can do without using component orchestration to get ready to use component orchestration that I think are good ideas in general. So take the layered approach, I would say, and look for the code smells.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Cool.
I would say, final thoughts. You know, I don't want to go too deep, but I'm going to do it anyway. So you'll have to reel me back in.
But hold your breath.
So here's the thing. The component factory resolver is a really, really great tool for some scenario like we've outlined here, right? So you're talking about a scenario where you have multiple components and you want to determine which one to spin up in a certain spot dynamically, but not have it be tied to NGFs. Perfect scenario. Great. Love it. It gets a lot better than that, though. And that's the thing that I want to use as a final thought here. This can be used in lots of ways. Let me give you just one way that we have used something like this in an even bigger capacity. So let's imagine that you have something like this forum that you're creating, and you really like it, and you've spent a lot of time on it, and you have posts, and you have replies, and you have announcements, you have polls, and you really enjoy this thing that you've put together so much that you've shown it to your friend John Graham. And John Graham says, man, I really like that setup too. Can I use that? And you're like, sure, I'm going to put that into a package, right? So now you've packagized this thing. We say that word. I don't think that's a word, but we said it anyway. And so now you've
added
created
it to
this...
my user dictionary so that it stops complaining about that
exactly.
word.
Yeah, packagized. Exactly. So you've now put this into a package and you're allowing other people to consume it. Not just John Graham, but anybody out there who wants to use this thing from NPM. And that's great. But you've come up with four scenarios for forum items. What if they have more? How would you handle that? Well, think about this scenario. We have basically allowed the dynamic creation of a component. Do we need to know what component just got dynamically created? No, not at all. In fact, couldn't we open that up to be any component that anyone has ever created? We certainly can. So by having this dynamic factory component, or wait, am I saying it right? Component factory resolver, exactly.
Yes.
By having that and extending it in this way, I've not just made something that I can extend. I've made something that through configuration, someone else can extend. Like, it's very easy to do. They just need to give me a forum item with their own special customized component, and that's what I'll use. So, I mean, it's super powerful.
Yeah, and at that point, you're leveraging, you're like abstracting the framework a little bit. So it's, I think it's a little bit of an advanced concept, right? Because you're hiding the component factory resolver behind, you know, your package. Mm-hmm. But you're leveraging it, right? So that's a really, you know, awesome thing. And like you said, there's like scenarios that at the end of the day, you just have to realize you can't think of all of them, right? So how do you make it so that you can handle them without the walls crumbling around you?
Yeah,
which is good. I think that's great. And I just do want to mention, we'll include it in the show notes, that there is a complete example of this concept in Angular's documentation. They use an ad, like how to do like an ad banner as their sample. But we'll include a link to that because I know like for a lot of people like me, it's great to hear all this conceptual talk about stuff. But when you can't see it, it's hard to narrow it, you know, to nail it down. So go check out that post. That will, you know, be a really great resource to kind of solidify, I think, some of the things we've been talking about. And then hopefully you get some of the context around when and where to use it from our conversation. Cool, yeah. All right, so that's it. The end of this one. That was 50 minutes. That flew by. So thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, we appreciate it. Hopefully these remote recordings end soon because they're not fun to edit. And I'll be looking forward to when we're both talking in the same room again, hopefully shortly. But, you know, we give the people what they want, Chris, and they want content.
That is right.
So thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at John Graham Dev. Chris is at Pilgrim Secret. You can follow our blogs. Chris is on Medium. You can go to johngraham.dev. That's GRAHAM.dev. If you want to follow us and, you know, rate our podcasts, all that good stuff, let us know what you think. Hit us up on Twitter if you have scenarios you're not sure component orchestration works for. We'd love to talk about them with you, via any of our social media.
Absolutely. And if you are interested in being a part of things here at Miles Technologies, you can always go to www.milestechnologies.com/careers, and you can apply to work here in Lumberton, New Jersey.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Great. Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much.